Welcome to Lessons from Losing, a new podcast mini-series from Awin, exploring the stories behind successful businesses. On a win-win marketing podcast, we usually celebrate successful partnerships between businesses. But in this series, we're speaking to the founders and leaders behind those businesses to uncover the setbacks, mistakes, and turning points that help shape their success. Our first guest is George Sullivan, founder and CEO of The Soul Supplier. What began as a passion project helping sneaker enthusiasts find the latest releases has grown into one of the UK's leading sneaker and streetwear platforms. But as George explains, building that success wasn't always straightforward. From difficult decisions and growing pains to the lessons that continue to shape him as a founder, this is George's story. This is Lessons from Losing with George Sullivan.
You always have more time than you think. Everything feels like it's a rush in the moment. And this still happens to me today, 13 years into business. But you always have more time than you think. And that means that you have time to ask others that you trust around you to actually write this thing out and get your thoughts down out of your head and really evaluate and validate something. Because there is such a higher cost of making the wrong decision for something big, as I've experienced, that you think you're going to cost yourself by not making a decision fast, when actually you need to be slow so you don't cost yourself in the future. And that's the hedgehog mentality. Be like a hedgehog, don't be like a fox. So I'm George Sullivan. I founded a business called The Soul Supplier 13 years ago, which is a place that people discover by connect with others and buy next generation products, shoes and clothing mostly. We reach around 4.5 million a month, and we work with all sorts of different brands to help them become more culturally relevant, to grow, to help them sell out their products. We've got a brilliant team of 35 people, and I am helping to, you know, set the strategy, work with the team to understand where we're going, and and guide the ship mostly.
So if you can, like, take us back 13 years, or even beforehand, actually, and just give us a bit of context and a bit of an idea of, like, what prompted you to first found it.
Yeah, man, I grew up listening to hip hop. I was rapping the Marshall Mathers LP when it was first come out, parental advisory, explicit content. But everyone from Dr. Dre to 50 Cent to Eminem to D12, whoever it was, were wearing shoes, trainers, sneakers, right? Air Force Ones. Parents, we vary in roller coaster of struggle for them as I was growing up. And they were always in my head of, I want to get those shoes, you know. But then when I got to my 10th job after getting thrown out of school, I earned some good money, and then I started buying the shoes. Because they were like an old symbol of my success, because I was like, okay, I can be like the rappers that I wanted to be like when I was younger. And that was it. I got obsessed, man. And then after 2 years, I knew everything. And then I thought, I can start a website that helps other people like me find shoes from all of the retailers. And that's where the affiliate part came in. Because I could make money by recommending the right products to people.
This series that we've got is called Lessons from Losing. Speaking to founders about some of their early setbacks and failures that they might have had. So I wanted to ask you a bit about what is the single biggest failure or setback you think you've had and experienced as a business leader over the Soul Supplier?
So we've been coming up to 13 years in business. The biggest failure that I think relates to what we're doing right now is, and this is going to seem like a minor one, but it's a big one related to what we do, is we stopped our YouTube channel and our podcast in around 2019, 2020, and we've gone back to it on and off. And the reason we stopped doing it, and it was huge for us, we generated millions of views every month, but we weren't generating sales. And this is 6 years into the business. And I'm like, if something's not generating sales, why are we doing it? And this is exactly what's going on right now in affiliate. We all realize that just because something's not generating sales, it may be having a brilliant effect on other marketing channels. We stopped doing YouTube, and within a year, our Google rankings dropped off a little bit. Our engagement on social was not as prolific. All the other channels were affected. But it took me like 2 or 3 years to truly realize how much we had lost. So even though it wasn't generating sales, it had the halo effect on all the other channels. And this is what, like, brands we work with now are saying. They're like, content partners like the Soul Supplier are great. They might not generate loads of last click like a cashback, but they have an effect on all the other marketing channels.
Yeah.
And now in 2026, we're realizing and trying to relearn how to measure partners like us because we all understand this is what happens with good content.
Yeah. So was that a decision that was kind of born out of the kind of circumstances of the industry rather than you instinctively saying, I just don't think this is very good?
It was like, we would do the podcast. We had David Beckham on the Soul Supplier podcast, and it was a great moment, right? Anyone with a brain, I'm talking about me here, would think, you've got David Beckham on the podcast. He's got loads of views. It's so obvious to me now that that's going to be doing a lot for our brand, and people see me talking to David Beckham and Dan, and like, the brand recognition of that is good. But at the time, I was just like, well, how is this making money? It's costing us a bit to do this podcast. It's the YouTube content. It doesn't make money like our app does, like our website does. It's costing us. And it was just being so single-minded of, does this make money now? No. Okay, we'll stop doing that and we'll do more of this.
Yeah.
So it wasn't so much like we thought YouTube was rubbish.
Yeah.
It was more like we thought another channel was better.
Yeah.
And as a lean bootstrap business, we focused our time more on the app and the website, the sales machines, and stopped doing YouTube and eventually stopped it completely.
Yeah.
And it was just the wrong move, you know?
Yeah.
I should have thought, how do I hire someone that can keep all going in the right way?
Yeah.
Was there like an exact moment where you had that realization that, you know what, that's kind of a mistake?
Even recently we were talking about, should we relaunch the podcast? Our view is we are relaunching YouTube big time later this year.
Yeah.
But the realization when I went back and looked at the old podcast views, specifically the podcast on the YouTube channel, some of the pods were getting 50, 60, 70, 100,000 views.
Yeah.
And we hadn't been doing it long.
Yeah.
And this was in 2018 and 19, when we were early in podcasting. Yeah. 7 years later, podcasting is so much more saturated. Mm. And I wasn't happy with 100,000 views.
Yeah.
I'm like, what was I thinking? And it's like, if we had kept doing that now, the brand impact that would have had today and how that would have affected our whole ecosystem would be phenomenal.
But
creating something long form that has impact is like a way to get satisfaction.
Yeah.
So it does affect the team in a different way. But the biggest mistake I made back then as well was in 2016, we had, it's just before that, we had a second app called the Soul Exchange, which was a marketplace for buying and selling for the secondary market. The Soul Supplier was like the media part of the business, the links, the content, and that was the marketplace. I was getting a lot of stress because I couldn't seem to run both at once. There was a lot of sales coming in from the marketplace, a lot of customer service. And then I was debating, I can't run both of these at once. I didn't have the right team. I wasn't thinking about hiring great people then like I am today that could really take the weight off. StockX launched and I said, that won't work because they're verifying products in hand. We got an offer for investment because the investment market for secondary marketplaces in sneakers was huge. I turned it down. StockX got 6 million investment months later. I shut the Soul Exchange down 2 years later. StockX was valued at over $1 billion.
Wow.
Dollars.
Yeah.
And it's things like that where I was lacking understanding of the data.
Yeah.
Not understanding how the market was popping for the secondary market.
Yeah.
Not understanding that actually the marketplace app paid more money per order than the media part.
Yeah.
Not understanding we were early, not seeing the signal that StockX are getting something and I should be listening to that. I mean, it's just this thing of running on like, the hair in the headlights. In the early days of like entrepreneurship of like so much good opportunities, not enough time and just falling over yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many mistakes generally.
But that's part and parcel of that experience, right? And like how do you go about making those decisions now with that experience to try to, I guess, trim down as you know, as many mistakes as you can make? Or is it just part and parcel of it? You know, you just have to accept that that's the way things are.
I think it's about timing, man, is the truth. Like, because we're still making mistakes today.
Yeah.
but they might not be that bad mm-hmm. if the market moves on.
Mm-hmm.
And you make a mistake and actually things have shifted. The example of this would be like, we're just having conversations now, 6-7 months later, with brands who are like, we want you to do more content. It's very important to us.
Mm.
What can you do? We're seeing this. We're seeing you doing that. So that was a lucky, that was like a good decision.
Yeah.
But imagine if we had gone, actually, we don't think content's going to be big for 2026 because AI is going to do this and this.
Yeah.
So we don't hire those people.
Yeah.
That mistake would have been exacerbated because we would have been getting requests from brands and not been able to do anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's where like I see mistakes being timed to what's going on.
Yeah.
Like that StockX one.
Yeah.
Huge mistake because I missed all the signals.
Yeah.
And then the marketplace market popped off.
Yeah.
And StockX was valued at $1 billion. So that was one of those timing moments where it's like the mistake was exacerbated.
Yeah.
Even though we still grew,
it
was just so much more bad because you're like,
Are you constantly looking at that company now and just being like, this is, you know, as a sort of, you know, fork in the road moment?
It would be a lie if I said that that wasn't a moment that I thought, I should have acted on that. I should have been, like you said, these are all the learnings that make you like a better character.
Yeah.
A bit more slow.
Yeah.
I think you kind of asked that. It's like, I'm a bit more slow now.
Okay, yeah.
I liked someone's analogy. They said, be a hedgehog in a world full of foxes.
Okay,
basically, just stick in your lane and stick with it for a bit longer than others.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to switch now in this world because you go online and you see someone doing something good and you're like, we need to try.
Yeah.
And it's so intoxicating.
Yeah. Has there ever been a point over the years where you kind of genuinely thought things might not work out here? Like, you know, the really existential challenge that you've come up against?
Yeah, in 2024, we had to let go of 11 people.
Mm.
It was the most challenging year we'd had. We'd had 8 years of consistent growth before that. And 2024 was a real challenge. The cost of living crisis was rife in the UK. Trainer prices and clothing had generally gone up by around 30%. And people's priorities shifted because of COVID and they wanted to go on more holidays.
Yeah.
So everyone's spending habits and amount they could spend changed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I thought, we're not going to survive this.
Mm-hmm.
We are a business that makes a lot of money in affiliate commissions. All of the brands are now squeezing those numbers. Brands are also not investing as much like they are now in content because they can't work out the value as much.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started to come back in 2025. We went a bit smaller. We scrutinized everything ruthlessly. Everything had a magnifying glass on it.
Mm-hmm.
We all got really focused, worked a lot of hours, the senior team more so, to really like what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And we turned it around. In 2025, we bounced back and we grew again from 2024, which was like wild. I didn't think that would happen.
Yeah.
And it looks like 2026 could be growth again from 2025.
Yeah.
I thought the business was finished.
Really?
I thought it was because at the same time, AI was really getting more prolific in 24.
Yeah.
And I'm like, AI is going to really dominate search.
Yeah.
Where are we going to be?
Yeah.
Are people going to use a platform like the Sole Supplier? So what that made us do is into 2025 was double down more on content.
Mm.
And later into 2025, because we're like, we started to see AI is creating a craving in people for actual real good research content from real people.
Mm.
As well as they want their AI content, they actually want for fashion.
Yeah.
They want to know that a real person has recommended this, is well researched, is certified.
Mm.
So things started to shift and it wasn't as bad as we thought.
Yeah.
But I'd never been in that situation before and it was scary.
Yeah. Did you kind of like have to sit with that alone, do you think, a lot? Or have you got a senior leadership team that you can kind of share those anxieties with?
Absolutely. A brilliant leadership team that are like a couple of good friends in that team that have become friends because we are so supportive to each other.
Mm.
But it didn't mean that I wasn't losing sleep.
Mm.
It didn't mean that knowing I had to do those redundancy meetings and ultimately for the greater good, it sounds like a cliche, but to like protect the rest of the company that had to be done because there was no way we were making back the money that we were losing every month.
Mm.
We were in a loss-making position and we're self-funded. So we were burning through our own cash and we're like, that's the end date of the company.
Mm.
So that's really scary when it's that clear.
Yeah.
We had good financial planning at that point. So we could see the company end date like in 3-4 months if we don't fix this.
Yeah.
Really scary moments of like, there's a lot of people relying on me in this,
yeah.
this, and family as well. Like, yeah, you know, yeah. I look after my family in that way. So it's like, yeah, it's wild. I'm not sitting here complaining. Like, I run a company, I'm in a blessed position. But yeah, you're losing sleep. You're thinking, what are they going to think? How are they going to get, are they going to be able to get a job? The market's tough. It's like, all this shit's going on in your head. But I do believe I'm a better character as a result of it.
I was going to ask you that, like, those experiences, as challenging as they are, do you think that they've helped inform not just the leader that you are today, but the person you are today?
Yeah, because today I constantly have that moment in mind, that 2024 moment. I constantly have how that made people feel in the company in mind. Mm-hmm. I'm working some days and I've got a daughter, like, so, but I want love spending time with her, my fiance. But I've had to say to them a few times at the start of this year, I'm in a big sprint at the minute. I need to be all in on this. Because if I don't, I might be back in a 2024 situation.
Kind of infects the culture a little bit, doesn't it?
It's made me work harder and it's made me dial my focus in. Like, I haven't been drinking for 8 months. I don't plan to. I'm just like, I want to do the best thing for the company, my family. Yeah. Keeps your head in the game. Because you get complacent with 8 years of success.
Yeah, of course.
You go, oh, it's going to keep going. And then that happens and you're like, shit, I'm not immune here. Yeah.
Can you give any sort of example, do you think, around a recent decision you might have made that you might have gotten wrong in the past, but you've kind of made an alternate approach thanks to that experience?
Defining exactly what someone's doing when you're hiring them. Giving them a really ambitious plan to start with. Whereas in the past, I would have done that. And then we stopped doing that as much. We were like easing people into the role and realizing that that's actually not the right way to do something, because we all want to work hard. We've got, let's say, a high performance culture, but also some brilliant benefits of like flexible working, autonomy, work abroad, like early finish Fridays, like all of this good stuff that, if you don't set the tone for the role, the person might just come in and be like, oh, this is all good fun. So one of the things we've done again recently is hiring slowly and being like very clear about what you do in your role and saying to the person, look, we're going to work this out together, but this is an ambitious role. This is what a week could look like. This is what a 90-day plan could look like. So they're like, wow, there's a lot going on here. And they understand, right? Rather than just be like, oh, welcome, do a few meetings this week, just do a little bit. And they're just like, an ambitious person will be like, what's going on here? And we've made that mistake. So little things like that, which help the team, I guess, and the culture. Some people might be listening to that and be like, oh, it sounds like you want to work people hard. But actually, if you're hiring someone that's ambitious, they want to come into somewhere and like really show who they are and be given the opportunity. It's little things like that, man. But nothing's perfect.
Nothing's perfect.
There's mistakes every week. I'm probably making them right now. What's going wrong?
Speaking of like example mistakes or instances like that, is there ever been like what looked like a loss to begin with that inadvertently turned into a success?
Yeah, it's going on right now, which is organic traffic from Google started declining because of AI over the last year or two. ChatGPT started stealing some of the informational queries. We're like, oh, this is a huge problem. What does this mean for a website like ours? But now what it means is that content on websites has actually become even more important. It might be harder in some cases to get people there, but actually this content is way more important than ever because it gets referenced in AI and brands need to get that share of voice on sites like ours. And the audience wants sites like ours with that trusted authority, or like the most negative experiences are the biggest character builders. That's exactly how I've lived, you know, whether that's my own personal life. I've had to learn some hard lessons that have made me a better individual. To work, we had a big problem with Meta, and a lot of people will relate to this because Meta changed a lot over the last 6 months. And it completely ruined one of our ad accounts for about two months. And we were losing a lot of revenue off the back of it. I was like, if this continues for 4 or 5 months, we will have to scale back because this is like a big part of our revenue loss that we're losing. And I was convinced that in 2 months, this is going to be still continuing mm-hmm. because I there was no fix to this problem. Mm. I tried everything
yeah.
and we had different people trying things, spoke to different people at Meta. I was like, we're scaling back in 2 months. Mm. There's no way we're fixing this. Mm. And then all of a sudden, someone in our team found somebody on Reddit, a random person from Austria, who had a fix to the problem, fixed the problem. The same month, we had like 5 incoming inquiries from brands who wanted to do fixed fees yeah. to like do different campaigns for different products. Fixed fees, not affiliate. Yeah. And everything changed instantly. Wow. Within the space of me thinking in 2 months, we're going to have to scale back.
Yeah.
Within like a week or two, everything was fixed and revenue was on the horizon from a different angle.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, Matt, that was another teacher of like, I have to stop thinking about the future too much.
Yeah.
Because it's just an illusion.
Yeah. Did you get in touch with the guy on Reddit to say?
Yeah, we're working with it.
Oh, are you? Yeah.
And on different stuff. Yeah. Now, my mum came home one day from a late train in the city. She was a legal secretary and she was crying. She was like, another late train. I've got home late. I'm not going to be able to cook dinner. She's like, there's got to be some solution for this. This was when I was in the early days of Soul Supplier. I said, don't worry, mum, we'll figure this out. We'll get you some compensation for the delayed trains. And then my mum's like, we need something like an app. I was like, let's build it. I was like, wanting to help my mum. And we built it. It was called Trains from Hell. You can still probably Google it. The Trains from Hell app was built with around £30,000 of Soul Supplier money.
Oh, wow.
Pure ADHD idea.
Yeah.
How was this app going to make money? Well, we were going to take a very small fee that people got back from the delayed train. Imagine that, though, as a revenue model.
So you're going to have like a kind of commission on the yeah. compensation that is paid back to
yeah.
the... Right, okay.
The full ticket, yeah. a little bit of compensation, Trains from Hell's little cut. It's not scalable, this business, right? Yeah. But we did that for around 3-4 months. Mumsy was happy. Okay. I was invested in her pain.
Yeah.
Yeah, looking after her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I realised, like, I'm meant to be running the Soul Supplier here, yeah. not Trains from Hell. But today, move like a hedgehog. Really weigh things up before you divert.
Yeah.
Because it's like the biggest cost of time, money, energy.
I think that's the thing as well, is that you can take something from these like errors of judgment sometimes. And it's maybe just that to move a bit slower, like you say, and to kind of be a bit more methodical in what your eventual decision is.
Yeah, like planning, you know. It's not, Mum, this is going to affect us if we do this.
Yeah,
sorry, I love you. But none of that existed. Yeah. It was just like, sounds like a good idea. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's spend 30 grand building the app. Yeah. Mental.
What do you think you know now as a leader that you really wish that you'd understood earlier in your career?
You've got to be that version of you in your head if you want to be a good leader.
Mm.
You know, so like if I've been going out on the piss too much, not training, you know, not getting the good sleep that I need because my brain is 100 miles an hour and I need that sleep. Like, and I'm not loving myself. I can't be there for other people. Mm. It's as simple as that. And everyone's got a different vision in their head of who they think they should be.
Mm.
But I believe if you want to be a leader, and that doesn't mean that you manage people.
Mm-hmm.
It could mean that you just want to be there for your sister or brother to set a good example, or you need to help your mum who's struggling. You know, that's a leader.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be at work. Mm. We can be a leader to anybody. Then you need to be that person that you've got in your head
mm.
so you can love yourself and then it can ripple out.
Mm.
And I've had many times where I haven't loved who I am and that has affected my leadership
mm-hmm.
because I can't focus on others because I'm too busy thinking about who I'm not
mm-hmm.
and how I'm struggling.
Yeah.
And so today I really just try and do that every day,
yeah.
like trying to, and I'm happy with it today.
Yeah. Because how old were you when you started Soul Supplier?
23.
Yeah.
22. Yeah.
So if you were to go back to your 22-year-old self, say, what's one thing that you would kind of say to yourself in terms of that guidance or advice?
People are going to hate this answer because it sounds like it's a cop-out answer. But I would just take ADHD medication.
Okay.
The simple as that.
Yeah.
Because I only started taking it last year.
Mm.
And I shunned it for all these years. And that's such a funny answer, isn't it? Because it allows me to slow down
mm.
and it allows me to breathe.
Mm.
It allows this noise to calm down a little bit in my head.
Mm.
and it allows my energy balance to be more consistent. And what that allows me to do is just think a little bit more clearly. And I'm on the lowest dosage that you can have, and I have been on that, and I'm happy with that, right? But for me, that would have allowed me to not make as many like big mistakes, because it would have just slowed me down a little bit. And it's very disruptive to people around as well, like ADHD, impulsivity, you know, and just being quite like spontaneous like that. It's very disruptive to people in the office as well. I'd come in with one idea next week. I'm quite a good salesperson. I'd have another idea the next week, another idea the next week. There's no psychological safety for a team because they're like, what version are we going to get? Where are we going? And Maya and Dan, they would be like, this is just consistent now and it's nice. It doesn't mean I wasn't saying good ideas at points, but it's that for me is a big unlock, I think.
Just kind of leveling out a little bit more.
That sounds like a broad answer, but if you've had a burning desire to do it, like anything, and you don't do it, you're going to live in regret. So it doesn't matter what anyone else around you says. Your parents are going to have a version that they want to tell you. Your friends. Your friends can be your biggest allies and your biggest enemies. They'll bitch about you in the WhatsApp group because you started a business about trainers. They'll be like, fuck this guy, what's he doing? He thinks he's going to start a successful business around trainers. This stuff will happen, but I think that it's always better to try rather than looking back in regret, or don't look back in anger, as Oasis said. And I was lucky because of the market timing. We were very early in the sneakers streetwear market in the UK. And couple that with a bit of hard work and me just constantly trying things. The ADHD helped in that regard because I was relentless. Some worked, some didn't. It helped the business grow. And then we hired good people and we stabilized, and then it's like it starts self-fulfilling. You got to try, haven't you? You got to try without ruining your life, I would say. Don't try if it's going to mean your family and everything's on the line. You can't support your kid or your... Within reason, figure out how you can try in a safe way, in a small way. Start the Instagram page. Try and build the website and vibe code it. Little steps that make you go, I can do this. It's the Nike mantra, just do it. That's why I love it.
You mentioned luck just then, actually. And that's always a big factor in a lot of founder stories, both on a good luck side, but also there's some bad luck there. What role do you think luck's played in your own kind of story?
It's the ability, you create your own luck. I really like the book, The Luck Factor. Someone told me to read that, so I gave it a good look. And it's, they actually studied lucky people, and there's things that lucky people do that unlucky people don't. And it's everything from the way you think to how many people you speak to in an event like this, to how you walk into a room and smile, to the amount of experiences you try and do versus an unlucky person. So in my regard, like, my luck came in. Quick summary. I started the business. It was early. For 9 months, it felt like we weren't making any money. We weren't, and we were struggling. Then we had that really good moment where we made like £2,000 in one day from one big shoe release. And then things took off from there. I was ready to quit just before that moment. And if that hadn't have happened, then I probably would have quit because I was working full time. So that's where the luck comes in. Obviously, I was trying to get my site in Google. But it was very lucky that the biggest shoe of the year, we got number one in Google for. And I hadn't been able to get one before that. That's luck. I was doing the right things, yes. But the fact that it got there a week before it released, meaning we made that, there's so many variables. So that's where like the timing comes in. It's like, it's just, I think it plays a factor in everyone's story.
Do you think that like
I think it's underplayed.
Do you think you have to have a certain element in your, just your personality of being open to luck being a factor? I think sometimes maybe some people worry about, if I can't control everything, then I'm not going to try. Whereas for other personalities, there's a speculative element or aspect to it where it's just like, I'm going to try my best and hopefully something's going to come off. And that sort of optimism they've got embedded in.
I love that. Yeah, that's the way. It's just like, we've got to stop thinking that we're the reason why we're successful.
Mm.
That's a really mad thing to say because I'm sitting here talking to you on this. But this is like the guru complex. And there's a, this has been studied, and I love this theory. It's the survivorship bias, which is for every two people that succeed, there's eight people that have failed. But you don't hear about the eight people that have failed.
Mm.
But the two that succeed will tell you that that's the way. And everyone's like, they'll watch the Stephen Bartlett podcast and be like, he's got the way. But what you didn't see is that eight different people that tried his way and they didn't succeed because the timing was wrong and all of the variables that are outside of their control. They just see Bill Gates succeed in building Microsoft and think, wow, you know, he's the guy. He must know everything.
Yeah.
But I think what I'm saying here is like, we're all human. We all make mistakes. And it's like you just said, how can we just try our best? Let go of us always believing that we're like the master of a destiny because we just don't know what's around the corner.
Yeah. All right, last question for you. What does winning or success mean to you today?
Look, I still want to build something brilliant in this space. I'm still on that mission. I couldn't keep a job for 3 or 4 months. I had 10 before I was age 22. It's mental. But I'm here 12, 13 years later running the Sole Supplier. What it means to me today is I'm not stopping until we have built a platform in this space that is the true voice of this culture, that helps people discover, it helps people engage and find others, and it helps people shop. And that's what I believe the Sole Supplier app is all about. So that's one thing. But for me, it's really like, can I enjoy the process of that? So working with great people, some of them I'm here with today, like Maya and Christian, and can I then balance family alongside that?
Yeah.
It's like quite a few things at once, really.
Yeah.
I would have told you it was all about money back in the day, and that's still important to me. But money's not important to me to buy Lambos and whatever else. I'm not like a material person. I don't buy watches and like stunt with cars. Money's about security for me, loved ones, right? That's what money gives. So that's still important, like it is for everyone. Everyone wants that to some degree. But really, it's about, can we build something great whilst doing it with good people and having fun in the process?
Yeah, yeah.
Fun and hard work don't always go hand in hand, though.
Yeah.
you're like the Meta problem. I thought the company was going to have to scale back.
So that
wasn't fun a lot of days.
Yeah.
There was a lot of stressed people.
Yeah.
But when you solve a problem like that, you're like, yes, it's the best feeling.
Yeah.
Everyone's like shoulders drop. You're like, we're now back on track.
Yeah.
And then that's a nice feeling.
Yeah.
You need the highs and the lows.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the highs you don't appreciate, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's tricky, man, isn't it? It was a greedy era. And now we're in a proud era where we're creating content that matters, doing stuff with brands that matters. The team are creating stuff they're more proud of. Like that's important for everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you're just like selling stuff or...
Yeah.
It's a bit like...
It's just transactional.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a bit of age as well.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, we want to... Okay, revenue is important, but are we feeling good about the work as well?
Yeah.
Like you said, this podcast, a specific example, like you said before, it's like speaking to people, founders, having conversations. It's like, that's all what you said, of like enjoyment and pride and the love of the work.
Exactly, yeah.
Because we know when we do that, oftentimes to create the vibes first, the revenue comes in the future.
Yeah.
The promotions come, the success.
Yeah.
If you focus on the good feelings first.
That's all for this episode of Lessons from Losing. Next week, I'll be joined by sisters Tanika and Olivia Dabson, co-founders of Cubby, as they share their own founder journey, including a nail-biting experience pitching their business on the BBC's popular entrepreneur TV show, Dragon's Den. If you've enjoyed listening, make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss the rest of the series. And if you'd like to watch the full video interviews, just head over to Awin's YouTube channel right now. Until next time, thanks so much for listening and tune in again for another Lesson from Losing. Goodbye.